but go and fail, because that's what breaking down is you go and you try, and then you miss, and then you try again. So for example, in the military, what we do is there's a 50 caliber machine gun, which was my weapon whenever I was in Iraq. And when you're firing at something, it's not like a sniper rifle where you look through a scope and you aim and you shoot. With a 50 caliber machine gun, you have to walk the bullets up to the target. And so what I tell people is that's what business is. You're walking the bullets up, and you're missing and you're missing and you're missing until you finally hit it. And every time you miss, it's not something crippling. It's actually, failure is going to move you forward much faster than anything else.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 113, with founder of Vetrepreneur Tribe, Andrew O'Brien.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey girls and guys, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston, and co-hosting today with me is founder of Ascension Mentorship, Albert Winks. Thank you so much for joining us in today's session. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Happy New Year's, guys. 2018 is already upon us, and 2017 completely blew by, and I learned quite a bit during that time. I think the biggest thing that I learned is that I can't do everything myself. And in fact, if I was to start New Inceptions over again, I would have started going to a working space like Collaborate 317 a while ago. Here's the thing. I mean, entrepreneurship is hard, but if you don't have to do it alone. And that's why I started the Junto along with the awesome folks out at C317. You know, they have what I like, you know, it is the abundant mindset, which, you know, I believe is huge in achieving anything meaningful. You know, we're all working together for a common goal. And this is also the reason that today's guest, Andrew O'Brien, started the Vetrepreneur Tribe. And as you'll hear, he felt that veterans were going unrecognized for their contribution to the entrepreneurial community. So he wanted to do something about that. And in today's chat with Andrew, we'll learn how he got to be known as the publicity guy in his previous career, why he's chosen to leave that career behind to start the Vetrepreneur Tribe, because it was actually doing pretty well. And we'll also touch on how to know when it's time to make a big transition yourself, and how people can build up their own resiliency in their life and business. Anyway, I just want to remind you guys of Facebook groups for entrepreneurs. And as you've heard, my new group, the Junto, is growing fairly well. We have some good engagement in there, and I'm excited to see what it becomes. And you might be asking, why did I make the group? Well, the truth is I've realized how a lot of people consume their content these days, and it's through social media. And, you know, Facebook seems to be really the default internet app on a lot of people's phones these days. So instead of combating Facebook like you might with a blog, making a group allows you to join in on the traffic that's already there. And unlike Facebook ads, you don't have to pay, at least not yet. Now, there are specific ways to grow a group, especially for business purposes. And the truth is that it's not as simple as you think. You have to know how to engage, entertain, and position yourself within your group. And you also have to know how to set up your group and your profile so that people can easily find it. You know, all this and more is covered in Arnie Giske's Facebook Groups for Entrepreneurs course. And Arnie himself has around 40,000 people, 40,000 now, in his group. That was very short time ago, it was 30,000. So yeah, I mean, he knows what he's doing. And if you've been thinking of growing a Facebook group and want to check out Arnie's goods, you know, he has a free cheat sheet available that you guys can get you started on. And you can find that cheat sheet at newinceptions.com/Arnie cheat sheet. For those of you who don't know, Arnie is spelled A-R-N-E. And again, that's newinceptions.com/Arnie cheat sheet. So guys, show notes and show note extras of our conversation with Andrew R. at newinceptions.com/113. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC and Albert coming at you today, and looking forward to being with you for the next hour or so. And as you know, this is, you know, this is an, I could say we're pretty vet friendly, yeah. Don't you, Al?
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, we've had a few vets on the, veterans on the show from time to time, and you know,
yeah.
You are one. So I would hope you'd be, you know, friendly to your co-veterans. And I'm married to one, so, you know, want to make sure that we get guests on that can speak directly to the veterans and our audience. And, you know, I think we both believe that veterans, due to the way that they've been trained, might have a much higher chance of success at being an entrepreneur. Right. I think you definitely believe that. And in my mind, I think the military usually does a great job of teaching discipline, patience, functional leadership.
Usually.
And, but you know, all of which are important to an entrepreneur. And, today's guest, I think, might be able to say the same thing. And his name is, Andrew O'Brien. He's founder of the Veterpreneur Tribe, a Facebook group, something, Facebook groups is something I'm getting into. And I think we're going to be able to pull out pretty well, but, he's founder of the Veterpreneur Tribe and is also in the past life known as publicity guy, where he, you know, he's helped, entrepreneurs learn how to gain media exposure without spending valuable time or money on outdated PR firms, press releases, or media kits. And, you know, a name that I've actually dropped and you've dropped on the show a couple of times is Caleb Maddox. And, you know, that's one of the folks that he's helped along the way. So with that kind of a background, lots of different places this conversation could go today. And let's get going. How are you doing today, man? Andrew?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, appreciate you taking some of your time out of your busy schedule. I heard here that you're going to be going to some places here in not too distant future.
Yeah. Yep. I've been traveling quite a bit, and there's a lot more traveling going on. I'm getting ready to head to DC and Illinois. And then next month I'm going to Russia. And then the next month I'm going to Paris. And then the next month I'll be in Germany.
Wow. So you're still doing... You're still doing the public speaking gig, I can see then, huh?
Yeah, now I'm doing it for free though, because Uncle Sam can't pay for it anymore. So I don't need Uncle Sam. I made my own money, so I can do it myself.
There you go.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, Andrew, I definitely appreciate you being on the show today. And I know that before getting on, we had talked about that you wanted to focus on a couple of main topics of overcoming trauma and also resiliency and the warrior mentality. And so help us and the listeners understand your background and what got you, what was your pivot points and things like that that have led you to where you are now.
Yeah, so I'll give like a 2-minute overview of my life story and we can just kind of pick that apart where you want. Sure. So I was born and raised in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas, and I was actually born to a prostitute mother. Now, I don't say that to be mean or to be hateful. That was her career choice. She was a prostitute and a stripper. And so being raised in that environment, I was raised in motel rooms, trailer parks, apartments, houses, cars, all types of places. And I witnessed a lot of sexual transactions since the age of 4 or 5. And my first memory of a child was sleeping in a motel room. My older brother was there with me. She would always bring her clients back to that same motel room. We'd be sleeping on that pull-out couch. She'd be having sex next to us on the bed with whatever client she had with her at the time. And my first memory is my brother coming up, cuddling behind me, kind of spooning me and putting his hands over my ears to try to protect me from the noises that were happening right next to us. So that was, you know, my introduction into the world. I always say I was born into war. War is all I know. War is all I understand. And so going through those experiences, I decided when I got into my teenage years, I started getting into like drugs and alcohol, of course, to try and escape, you know, real life, to try to avoid real life. And I tell everybody, you know, I've been deployed to Iraq, but actually the most dangerous time of my life was in my teenage years. I was jumped. I was stabbed. I've had guns pulled on me, did a lot of drugs, sold a lot of drugs. And made a lot of mistakes. And it's because of the environment I was raised in. When you get a bunch of kids who are raised from similar environments together, it usually doesn't equal a win. It usually equals some, you know, mistakes happening. after all that, I decided my life was going down a path and I had two options. Option one was either end up in jail or dead. And option two was join the army. And that was a pretty easy choice for me. I thought, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die an honorable death, not die, you know, because I'm selling or doing drugs. So I joined the army in 2007. I did 4 years in. I served in 227th Infantry Battalion. I was actually an 88 Mike, which is a truck driver. But I did a deployment to Iraq from 2008 to 2009, 12-month deployment. I served as a lead gunner during that deployment and experienced war, real war. And it was an interesting experience. But, you know, I tell people Iraq was actually the safest I've ever felt in my life. And it was because the people that you surround yourself with, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your brothers, you've got your sisters, you've got people that you can depend on more than anyone you've ever known in life, including my own family. And so I enjoyed my time in the military, but I got back from Iraq. And it was before I got out. And they say that post-traumatic stress actually starts to hit in your mid-20s because your brain blocks out a lot of your childhood, especially when you've been through traumatic experiences. But something happens in your mid-20s where it starts to come back. So I got back from Iraq and then it just like Pandora's box opened and all this seemed flooding in. And I actually attempted to take my own life in 2010 at 22 years old. And luckily, I failed at that attempt. I woke up in the hospital 2 days later in the ICU with all these machines connected to me, coal still coming out of me, and woke up with this newfound appreciation for life. And got out of the military, started speaking about my story, about overcoming all these challenges. I started speaking on military bases. I was on over 70 global media outlets in 3 years, and I got to speak all around the world. I've been getting given over 20 awards for my speaking. But throughout that journey, my mother actually murdered her husband, shot him point blank in the head while he was sleeping. I went back to help her because she said someone broke into the house, which wasn't the case. She asked me to help her frame someone else for the murder. I, of course, said no and moved away. I didn't tell the cops. And then she tried to pin the murder on my brother. And at that time, I decided to go to the cops, tell them what she asked me to do. I testified against her in court in October of 2014, where she was sentenced to 60 years in prison. And that was my life story of everything I've overcome and everything I've faced and all the challenges that have led to where I am today, which is, you know, I owned a successful publicity company. I still own it, but I don't do much in it anymore. And I started the Vetpreneur Tribe, which is helping veterans start businesses.
Wow. You know, sounds like every other story we've heard, yeah. Man. I didn't hear anything original in there. Yeah. Wow. That's something.
Oh, wow. I'm looking through my notes here of all the different things that you just talked about. I guess the first thing would be to, going back to your military experience. One of the things that, you know, I think that a lot of people, including my wife, Maria, have talked about is that, you know, being in Iraq gave her a little bit of the time to actually reflect and become more of herself, more so than, or just see how she would respond to different reactions. And so with the military, I think for a lot of people, for one instance or another, that, or one way or another, that it's able to give you that time to step away from the rest of your life and be able to kind of reflect on where you're at and your history or your own book at
that
point.
It definitely, it gives you time. I mean, all you have time to do is, as an 88 Mike, I was on missions nearly daily. I think we had like 2 days off out of 365 days, not including, you know, your 2 week R&R. And it gave you a lot of time to reflect, to see, think about life, to think about everything, and you were constantly busy at the same time. So it was kind of a combination of both.
You got back, Pandora's box opened, and then you went into public speaking more or less after your hospital incident. Now, why public speaking? Why not, you know, some other sort of like join another group or another cause that you would feel like another family and kind of go that direction? Why, why did you feel like getting on stage was the best medium to get your message out there, or to get, you know, to help others in the same
situation? Well, because whenever I attempted suicide, what I realized is how selfish I had been throughout my life. And what I mean by selfish is not just the fact that I was trying to take my own life and that would affect people. What I realized is how selfish I had been to be keeping this life story to myself. The fact that I wasn't sharing this, that I wasn't talking about it, that I wasn't, you know, putting this story out there to the world is actually causing more deaths than anything, because no one else got to hear it. Because that's what we all do as humans. We act like nothing happened. We act like everything's perfect. I mean, if you go to Facebook, everybody lives the perfect life. But I promise you, if you meet these people in real life, all that is lies. All that smiles and happiness and all that, it's all lies. People don't talk enough about the hard times. They just try to pretend and put this mask on, especially with social media, that everything is perfect. And it's not. Life is not perfect. Life is the exact opposite of perfect. So me not sharing my story was causing more deaths than anything, because I wasn't talking about it. So I could go and I could join a community. I could volunteer and do volunteer work, and I could do peer-to-peer support and affect one or two lives here or there. Or I could go out, share my story on a massive stage, internationally, and really have a big impact on the community. And so that was why I decided to go that route.
Okay. Gotcha. And how was the early stages of that? Because that's kind of one of the things that led you to being known as the publicity guy, is that, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a barrier of entrance there. So what did you find out on your early time on as went down that?
Yeah, it was the first 6 months of speaking, right? The first 6 months were probably the hardest, because I broke down and cried on stage almost every time for the first 6 months. And when I say cried on stage, I don't just mean in front of a few civilian people. I mean in front of uniformed military members, in front of soldiers, Marines, sailors. I cried. And that was hard for me as a man. You know, as a man, we are taught not to show emotions, not to cry. You're told since, you know, day one, stop crying. There's nothing to cry about. Be a man up. And so that was probably the most challenging for me, was after, you know, that first 6 months of experiencing that. But after 6 months, the tears stopped. And what I realized was speaking was therapy for others, but even more so, it was therapy for me. It was finally, you know, facing my life, talking about it, and then overcoming it.
Wow. And then once you were able to get through that barrier right then that was when things started picking up for you?
Yeah. The first 6 months, I was doing a lot of nonprofit speaking. I was doing a lot of, you know, speaking on my own dime. And then all of a sudden, with all the media attention, the government got wind of my story. I actually, there's a reporter here in Austin, Texas, that did a story on me, and it landed front page of the Austin American Statesman, which is the biggest local newspaper. And it was picked up by the Associated Press, and it was put front page on newspapers around the world. And the most important one, it was put front page on Stars and Stripes, which is actually put on all military bases. It's on all military bases. So when some of the decision makers saw my story in the Stars and Stripes newspaper, I started getting hired to actually come out and speak.
So I'm curious. So how did you go from the speaking and getting into entrepreneurship with the publicity guy?
So what happened was, I was speaking for about 3 years, from 2013 till about beginning of 2016. And it was in 2016 that the government went through the biggest budget cut in history.
Yeah.
And the first place that they cut, of course, was mental health, which meant Andrew no longer had a job. I had no longer had a paying job to take care of my family. Now, I loved what I was doing. I felt like it was what I was meant to do. But if I can't, you know, feed my kids and keep the lights on, it, I can't do it. So I had to stop speaking for a while and take care of my family. And what I realized is, during these 3 years, I had gotten myself on over 70 global media outlets, on TV, on international media, national media. And I did it all without a publicist, without a PR firm. I did it by myself. And what I realized after meeting quite a few entrepreneurs throughout my 3-year journey was, this is something that I know they would love. And all entrepreneurs have a mission, a goal, a purpose. It's not just about the bank account. It's about, they're trying to change something. They're trying to impact something. So I decided to go that route. And then I built the publicity guy in his first year to a 7-figure company.
Yeah. Wow. So how would you, well, seven figures, that's a big number. So what do you attribute that to?
I attribute that to failing for so long. The first 3 years, I made enough money to feed my family, but you know, I made money in September because September is suicide prevention month in the military. Mm-hmm. So I made all my money in September and no money the rest of the year. And it was after 3 years, I think going 3 years of, you know, having a really good time. And then as entrepreneurs, we know you can be rich and broke the same day. Like it literally can happen the exact same day. So yeah. I learned throughout those struggles what I didn't want, what mm-hmm. I didn't want my life to be. And I knew that I could never work for someone again. Just, it wasn't possible. There's no way that could happen.
Right.
And then I looked at everything throughout my life, every time I've been hit, because like I said, I was born into war. So all I know how to do is fight. Mm-hmm. And entrepreneurship is a fight. It's, you know, constantly dealing with threats of lawsuits, customer complaints, you know, angry previous employees. And it's just like you are constantly being attacked from all angles. And the best way to look at business is war, and war is my life. So it's just, once I stopped looking at it as a victim and really looked at it as a warrior, as a soldier, someone's been a soldier since the day he's been born. That's when I started to really see success.
Yeah. What's interesting that you focused on the how entrepreneurs really do skip the publicity part. And how did you notice that gap? And how did you find that you were able to fill that void for entrepreneurs?
Well, what I realized is everybody thought that they didn't have a good enough story. Mm-hmm. They, you know, if it's not about rape, murder, or car accidents, the news isn't going to talk about it.
Right.
And if you're not, you know, if you're not the owner of Tesla, Apple, or Facebook, then you're not going to be talked about. And that was what I realized, is everybody thought that they didn't have a good enough story. But what I've learned throughout my years of speaking, and because I've heard every time I got off stage, I'd have lines going out the theater of people wanting to talk to me and share their story. And what I realized is everybody in this world has a story. Even that silver spoon fed kid has a story. And the thing is we just look at it as we aren't good enough. We don't have a deep enough story. So I saw that there's this big gap because everybody thought they weren't good enough. And I proved everybody wrong and proved everybody that they are good enough. And then business took off because people started realizing, oh, wow, my story is good enough to be in the news.
Yeah. And so you originally focused on anyone who is your niche market at the time.
Yeah, my niche market was any entrepreneur, which was the biggest mistake I made. you know, you have to have a specific audience, and I did right. any entrepreneur. But you know, the biggest thing in my screening process were people willing to talk about failure, because failure sells more than success. Mm-hmm. People want to know your mistakes, your issues, the things that you face, because it's human interest stories. I love talking about human interest stories, and I realized I was signing some entrepreneurs who just refused to talk about, you know, what they should be talking about, refuse to talk about their past and their mistakes. They just want to talk about, you know, they wanted to be the Grant Cardone with their private jets and their nice cars, acting like everything's perfect, nothing's ever gone wrong. I knew people that were going and literally renting cars from luxury car rental places just to do videos and act like they were more successful than they were. And what I've learned is, you know, success doesn't sell, failure does. So it was finding that the people that were willing to talk about their failure was the ones that would work for me. And then I made my mistake by signing anyone who would give me money, but those people weren't willing to talk in full transparency.
That's interesting. And then I know recently you went through a change, and I don't want to say necessarily stepped down from CEO, but you filled someone else into CEO so that you could go focus on the Vetrepreneur tribe. So talk to us about that transition and that decision, that breakthrough for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, we were successful in the first year. I did seven figures my first year. And to be honest, I did six figures worth of refunds in my first year. And it was because of mistakes that I made, right? And if you hear my name, if you hear about the publicity guy, you'll hear some amazing things and you'll hear some not so amazing things. But the one thing I always did is, if it was my fault, if it was my team's fault, we always gave the money back. But what I realized throughout that first year, even with that success, is something was missing. I mean, I still wasn't happy. I was waking up every day just stressed out, just dealing with issues. I just wasn't happy with where my life was. And what I realized is, you know, I had to stop speaking because I had to make money for my family. I started making money for my family, but I missed speaking. And it wasn't just speaking on stage. It wasn't the attention. It was the people that I was speaking to. I missed veterans. I missed the camaraderie. I missed the family. And so what I realized is after I created the success, I hired a new CEO for the publicity guy. I stepped down as CEO, and I'm still the founder of the company, but I don't run the day-to-day operations. And I wanted to start something for veterans. So I started Vetpreneur Tribe because I realized military veterans make up for 10% of the businesses in the United States, 10%. Mm. But they don't, you know, a lot of people don't know that people don't know that veterans make up for that large percentage of, you know, business. And so when I saw that, I was like, you know what, if we create a community for these veterans that could help them build and scale businesses, this is where my heart is. This is what something I'd enjoy doing. So that was my transition. And it was a rough one because, you know, you have to give away what you've built. But at the same time, I didn't really like what I built. So it wasn't as difficult as most people would think.
Interesting. And I joined the Vetrepreneur Tribe at about 500 members. Now it's up to almost 2,800 in the past, what, 6 or 8 weeks? So what do you attribute the majority of your success with the group thus far? And how are you vetting those who you want to be around with the camaraderie and those sorts of things?
Yeah, so I kind of let them filter themselves out. So the one thing that I do that I think most people miss out on in life in general, we are all so concerned about what people think about us. We're all so concerned about filtering ourselves because everybody is so easily offended now. And you say one thing that you think and all of a sudden half the world hates you, right? And so what I realized is I'm going to stop trying to please everybody else and I'm just going to be myself. So if you watch videos in the group or anything, I curse, I load weapons on videos, I'm myself and I don't care. And I've offended a lot of people, but I don't care about those people because their feelings don't fill my bank account. Their feelings don't pay for my bills. So I don't really care about their feelings. And it was more of, you know what, I've pretended to be this, you know, super professional and just, you know, I had a man bun and I had these nice fancy clothes and I was wearing these freaking tight jeans. And I was so uncomfortable. You know, in just in the world. And so I decided I'm done. I'm done with this. I'm done pretending. And I just started being myself. And it's the fact that I get to be myself that brings the right people to me and pushes the wrong people away from me.
Yeah.
Well, going back a little bit, one of the things that, you know, we it's kind of an overarching theme of what we're talking about is, you know, overcoming trauma. And, you know, this is one thing that I've discussed on the show a couple of times with other guests. And one particular, we were talking about breakdown and, you know, breakthrough. And that a lot of times when people have to go to a different level, you know, they have to go through the breakdown before they can go through the breakthrough. And a lot of times, I mean, I've had some guests that have said that the breakthrough can come independently of the breakdown. But, you know, personally, I think, you know, the breakdown provides that fuel. And so what you're saying about what led you to start the Vetrepreneur Tribe is that you weren't necessarily being authentic as you would have liked to be, like doing the actual stuff that you wanted to do. What are your thoughts on someone going through a breakdown or having to go through a breakdown before they go to something that they enjoy even more?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's how do you know something's going wrong if you don't look at it first, right? If you don't experience it. So you know, a lot of people do these think tanks, right? And I've been to a lot of masterminds where you sit in a chair and then like 20 people around you give you all this advice and opinions. And every single person tells you the exact opposite from what the other person tells you. And actually leaving a think tank or a mastermind, you're more confused than when you walked in because you've been given 20 different directions. And so what I tell people is really, it comes from experience. That's what life is. Like, I don't believe in college education. I don't believe in public education. I believe in life. I believe you can never learn anything as well as you can if you experience it firsthand. I can sit here and tell you how not to fail, but actually what I do in my group is I tell them, go fail. Don't look to me to tell you how not to fail. Go fail, because that's what's going to teach you. Be prepared for the failure. You're going to have to be prepared and be resilient with it, but go and fail, because that's what breaking down is you go and you try and then you miss, and then you try again. So for example, in the military, what we do is there's a 50 caliber machine gun, which was my weapon whenever I was in Iraq. And when you're firing at something, it's not like a sniper rifle where you look through a scope and you aim and you shoot. With a 50 caliber machine gun, you have to walk the bullets up to the target. And so what I tell people is that's what business is. You're walking the bullets up and you're missing and you're missing and you're missing until you finally hit it. And every time you miss, it's not something crippling. It's actually failure is going to move you forward much faster than anything else.
And speaking of resiliency, you know, one of the things that I think is a big part of is just people taking personal responsibility in their lives. And, you know, this is a huge topic today because I feel that a lot of, and this is probably part of your frustration of why you moved over to, you know, work with veterans specifically, is that, you know, a lot of civilians lack personal responsibility in their own lives. And there's different reasons for that. But, you know, when you break it down, I think that's one thing that the military teaches folks to do is, as my wife gave me the phrase, embrace the suck, and I've heard it numerous times since then. And when starting a business, you know, a lot of people will tend to think things will be an overnight success, and when it's not, sometimes it's easier to just go back to their comfort zone. And in fact, I think that, you know, everyone's friend Gary Vee, because of his upbringing, has had this built into who he is. Outside of the military, what are some of the ways that people can build up their resiliency, do you think?
You know, the biggest thing, I love this topic because I can't stand victims. And it's up to you on whether you're a victim or not, because I've heard numerous times, especially in the environment I grew up in, you know, oh, well, you know, the world, life just dealt me a crappy hand and this is just how I'm dealing with it. And I think that's the biggest cop out that you can ever give is life just dealt me this bad hand and I'm dealing with it. Life it's a gift, man. I'm not guaranteed that I'm going to live the rest of today. I'm going to get in my car, I'm going to go to a meeting, and maybe I get in a car accident and I never wake up, right? So who knows what can happen? And I'm not going to spend the rest of my life complaining about my mommy or complaining about all these issues. I'm going to take responsibility of my life. I'm going to realize things have gone wrong, but those things that have gone wrong have actually led to the best lessons of my life. I'm a father now to 3 kids, and I'm an amazing father because I didn't have one growing up. I'm an amazing father because my mom sucked. Like everything negative that has happened in my life has led into something positive. So I cannot stand the victim mentality. And so what I tell everybody is if you're going to sit there and complain about, well, I can't make a sale because of my competitor, or I can't overcome this challenge because of this person or that person, or I've got this client that's just going around destroying my name or all this, like, yeah, that's part of life. Welcome to life. This is what it is. The question is, are you going to sit there and you're going to complain and go back to that 9-to-5 because that's, you know, the easy route, or are you going to take the hard route that's going to be more beneficial in the long run? Take responsibility for yourself. If someone's going around talking crap about you, something happened wrong in that relationship. So how do you make sure that that doesn't happen again? How do you make sure that this doesn't happen again? And it's just looking at it as lessons instead of, oh, the world is against me. Because I promise you, the world will always be against you. That's what this world is. Life is not easy. It never will be. The question is, do you get hit and then just stay laying down so you don't get hit again? Or do you get back up? Do you hit back? And do you continue fighting and actually win? Because, you know, as we were discussing before this, resiliency and overcoming is 2 different things. Resiliency is surviving through something. Being a warrior is not just surviving through it, it's fighting back and winning.
Right. Totally true. And here's something else that I've been thinking about, and you sound like definitely the person to be able to talk to about this. If someone is resilient, if someone has that warrior mentality, you know, the flip side is that, you know, I've known people that have struggled in the past to know when to quit something or give up on something or push things back a little to work on something that might take their work to the next level, or like you, just be a better fit. Brené Burchard recently talked about how successful people know when to quit things earlier and one of his recent podcasts, which I'll have on the show notes. But, you know, this, along with the conversation with one of our recent guest, you know, helped me make my decision to becoming, you know, doing this next project, which is, again, building a Facebook group. And I have to ask you, how do you personally know when it's time to quit something that you have a lot of time and effort and, you know, resources put into, like you're, you know, you're the publicity guy, and then you're like, okay, I want to find a better way to get to where I'm wanting to go.
Yeah, you know, I make all of my judgments off of my own emotions. So what I feel, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, if I'm doing something that I hate doing, but I think, oh, I'm going to do it anyways because I know it's good for business, because so-and-so said so, because this influencer said I should do this, or because this person got successful from it. So what we all try to do, instead of recreating the wheel, we just try to follow other people's advice. But everything that I decide is based on where is my happiness? Because for me, money is great. I love money. But I tell people, when I make a sale, it's not money. It's okay. Like, for example, Saturday, I had my daughter's 9th birthday party. And for her birthday present at 9 years old, she got a trip to Paris. And that's something that I would have never experienced as a kid. And so I look at these opportunities, and I look at sales as, okay, if I sell this many people into this program, I can take this trip. I can do this thing. I can do that thing. So everything I do is judged off of memories. I don't care about the fancy car. I don't care about the fancy house. What I care about is, when my kids have kids, what are the stories that they're going to tell those kids? What is the legacy that I'm going to leave behind? So if I'm unhappy doing something like the publicity guy, I was making plenty of money there, and I could have built it to be a huge, huge company. But I woke up so angry that it was affecting the relationship with my kids. It woke up so angry that it was affecting the relationship with my spouse. Like, everything was just, money was coming in, but that money wasn't filling that void in me that I needed to fill. So what I tell people is, when you need to make that decision on whether to quit or pull back on something, it has to do with where's your happiness? How much time are you spending on something that you really don't want to do, but you're doing it because you think, well, this will bring me money.
Or an obligation that you just feel that you're having to do something as opposed to wanting to do something.
Right. We're entrepreneurs for a reason. So right. We don't have to do things we don't want to.
Right.
Well, how has it felt now that you have made those tough decisions and you're into the blue water there? How does it feel for you now to be doing what you're doing?
Feels good in my heart, but doesn't feel good in my bank account. But I think that's something I was prepared for. I think I was prepared to give up parts of a lifestyle that I had, because I still have the company, but it's not running as well as it would be if I was still CEO, and I'm still training up my new CEO. He's going to get it, but it's not like an easy, smooth transition. It's a learning process. And so for me, it's felt really good, because now, even though the money isn't coming in as much as it was, I'm also getting so much more time with my kids. I literally spend Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I do not check my Facebook. I don't respond to messages. I don't do anything. And I just focus on being a father. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I am just with my kids. And I'm spending more time now with my kids in 3 days than I was in 7. Mm-hmm. And it's because I've finally created that freedom for myself. And yes, I could be making a lot more money, but again, that money isn't going to create that legacy. It's not going to create those memories with my kids if I'm working 24/7. So it feels good.
It's just kind of, every once in a while when I hear that, it just kind of blows me away a little bit about, like, how our, you know, some of the, a lot of our generation's parents that, you know, did feel that responsibility to create legacy, like, their way of doing it was to work more and, like, not be there as much, but hey, they were still buying us stuff, right?
Right.
So it's just kind of interesting the different dynamics of the generations there. So, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to in the next few months here?
You know, right now my main goal is taking Vetpreneur Tribe to do something huge with it. So Vetpreneur Tribe is actually the first that I know of, and I've done research. The first community based around military veterans that are entrepreneurs, right? So again, I am in a blue ocean. I'm not in that red ocean. I'm in a very untapped market, and people will start coming in and trying to take it over. This is part of business. When people see something become successful, they try to go in and recreate it. Best part is being the pioneer of something makes it a lot harder for someone to come in and steal it away. So my goal now is to create so much more in Vetpreneur Tribe and really build up the community of military veterans that are entrepreneurs to be more successful, to be, you know, better than their counterparts, because right now everything's around Gary Vee and Tony Robbins and Grant Cardone and Ty Lopez. And I think that there's a big missing factor of veterans that are out there creating success and they aren't known well enough. So that's my goal, is to create this to be something huge. My goal over the next 6 months is to completely stop working in publicity altogether. I'm still doing some stuff in there. And, you know, obviously I still have bills to pay. So my goal is to fully replace that income in the next 6 months to really focus on, you know, where my heart is.
Good deal. Good deal. So as we're going into the last segment here, rapid fire questions, one of the topics or one of the questions that I love to ask people about is, what are your top favorite books you tell others about that have helped you become more of who you are today?
So I actually run a mastermind for military veterans that are entrepreneurs. And there's one that we just read last month. Every month we read a book. And the number one is Extreme Ownership. And it's written by two Navy SEALs. And they talk about leadership. They talk about being a leader, running a team and a staff and everything like that. And the lessons that they teach in there is amazing, because they talk about their war experiences, but it's not a book about war, right? They just talk about what they learned from these specific experiences during their time in service, where it was life or death. It wasn't, you know, about income or sales or anything like that. It was about how to survive and make sure people don't die. And they talked about leadership in there. I think that's something that we all could learn a lot more on. I think that's something you constantly need to learn on, is how do you be a good leader? Not just, even if you're a solopreneur, I mean, you still use other people's services. You still have contractors. You still buy things from other people, and you still have to lead those people as well. So I think leadership is key. So I would always say Extreme Ownership is the number one book I'd suggest.
Yeah. Yeah. Any others?
The Power of Broke, because I came from a broke household. So I love hearing stories, because if you think about it, like the best entrepreneurs, the nicest entrepreneurs come from rough backgrounds. They come from things like that. And I love hearing stories of people's dreams coming true. It motivates me and it keeps me moving forward to create something big, because I know it's possible. So The Power of Broke by Damon John.
So what is one gift that you'd like to give to others?
The gift of motivation. And the reason I say that is I think people quit too much. I think they quit too often. I think the time gets hard and it's easy to, you know, think about stability. It's easy to quit on your dreams, especially if you get a job offer from someone that's, you know, stability. You've got health insurance, you've got the steady paycheck biweekly, and is good income and all that, and the IRS doesn't look at you as much because those greedy bastards. And so I think motivation is the gift I'd love to give to everybody. Is there's a saying that I love, and I don't know the exact way that they say it, but if you want to find, you know, there's a lot of dead dreams, a lot of successful businesses found in a cemetery, because people quit on their dreams, because they didn't continue, because they found comfort and they stayed in that comfort. And so my thing is, I wish I could motivate people that even when you're facing foreclosure, because I've been there, even when you're facing repossession, because I've actually had cars repoed, even on those times where you have to stay up 32 hours just to pay your electricity bill that's overdue before they cut it off. Those times, you got to stay motivated and you got to keep moving forward. So that's the gift I'd love to give.
What is one thing that costs under $100 that has changed your life?
That's a hard one. One thing under $100 that has changed my life. I don't even know where the last thing I bought that was under $100.
Don't brag too much.
I don't know very many things that do cost under $100. But, you know, I think that one thing that's changed my life is my daughter's bike. And the reason I say my daughter's bike is I got to give that to her. And my daughter is 9 and she's always been scared of riding bikes. And I bought her a bike on Saturday for her birthday party, and watching her get on that bike and ride that bike, it was life changing for me, because everything I learned about sports, about riding bicycles, about everything, I had to learn from movies. I didn't have someone there to teach me how to throw a ball, how to hit a ball, how sports work, how to ride a bike. I mean, to this day, I still don't know the rules of baseball and football and all that, because I didn't have that role model growing up. So buying that bike that was under $100, but watching, you know, being able to teach my daughter how to ride a bike was probably something that changed my life forever, and something she'll remember forever.
Wow. Nice. And anytime you need help with the football stuff, let me know. I'm like a huge fan, have been since my peewee days of football. So I'll volunteer that information anytime. What is one thing you believe all high school students must know?
You know, the one thing I think they need to know is what credit is, because I dropped out of high school my senior year and I was thrown out into the real world at 17, and Capital One offered me this card that gives you free money. And I didn't know that free money meant you had to pay it back. I thought, you know, oh, it's just free money. And that set me down a path of, you know, finding free money all over the place and just never paying it back, to the point now I've made really good money. I've got bank statements to prove it. I've got everything that I would need to live a nice life, but I'm having to pay like 3 months of deposits and houses that I get. I'm having to pay high deposits for cars and high payments, all because it doesn't matter how much money I have. What matters is what that stupid credit report says. So yeah. I think that's something that we should have been taught in high school.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I would agree that, you know, people in their 20s, especially when they're, you know, I know that back in college, we would, you know, the very few pieces of mail that I would get between, especially early on, was between parents and older folks that still use snail mail at the time, and all the credit card companies that would be like, here's credit. And I'm like, for me, it was always a no-brainer, but I can see how for a lot of people, I mean, it's just like, as you said, free money. So go for it. Last one, what's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
The secret to achieving personal freedom is based on, I mean, what you believe personal freedom is. And for me, personal freedom is time. Time is something that can never be replaced, and it's not something that can't be earned. Money can always be earned. Money can always be replaced, but time can't. So being an entrepreneur is the way to get that personal freedom, to build that thing and put that time investment in, as you will get an ROI on that time investment if you stick to it, if you keep putting in the work, you keep putting in the time. So that's where personal freedom comes from. It's looking at time as an investment that you're going to get a return on eventually, but it's not going to be overnight.
So as we're wrapping up today, if you were to give some pointers on how folks can improve either their situation or their behavior, what would you say those steps might be?
Step number one is stop acting like it didn't happen. Whatever you've been through, whatever you've gone through, whatever trauma, and I believe everybody's gone through trauma. People hear trauma and they think of like the worst things that could ever happen in life. But I've known people that have gone through trauma from a breakup, and it wasn't an abusive one. There's nothing negative that happened, but it was just it was the worst thing that they've experienced. And I think as human beings, we always try to compare our situations to everybody else. And like, well, someone's always been through worse, so I really have nowhere to complain. And I think that's a cop-out as well. You know, you don't need to compare your life. I've been through prostitution, war, suicide, and murder. If you're trying to compare your life to mine, and I don't want to compete. If you want to win that competition, I hope that you would, and I don't, because I don't want to win the competition of having the hardest life. And I promise you that I don't. There's many people in this world that have lived worse lives and harder lives than I have, and worse experiences. But facing whatever's happened in your life, that traumatic time or times where you just try to act like it never happened, you try to put a Band-Aid over it and all that, face it. Face that experience, face it head on, and forgive people. The biggest thing I tell everyone is forgiveness. And I don't mean it in any religious way, in a spiritual way. I mean, you will never, ever be able to live the life that you want if you hold on to those memories, because they are holding you back from the life that you could live. In 2015, I went to prison. I visited my mother. I sat across her from her at a picnic table. And I forgave her. I forgave her for everything, for the life that she raised me in, for asking me to help frame someone else for the murder, for putting me in all these circumstances and situations. And I didn't do it for her. I didn't do it to make her feel better. I did it for me because I would never be the father I could possibly be. I would never be the man I was meant to be if I allowed that ghost of her past to control the rest of my life. I was still allowing her memories to control me, and she was in prison. I wasn't even speaking to her, but somehow she still had control of my life. And so forgiveness is the number one thing that you have to do. Go and forgive yourself. If you've made mistakes, forgive the people that have done wrong to you, because if you don't, you will never, ever get where you want to be.
Mm. Well, if someone has that kind of a mental block that they, like, forgiveness is something that they find that's like super hard for them to give, Was there ever a time that you kind of struggled with forgiveness, and how did you get over that hump?
So it was, they always say you got to hit rock bottom. So I was going through a separation with the mother of my children, and we went to court, and in that courtroom, she played an audio recording of an argument that we had. And when they played that audio recording, I heard a man on that audio that was a monster, someone that I was not proud to be. And it was me. Now, I don't even remember saying these things. I blacked out and I said some really, really, really hateful things. I mean, I degraded her beyond, you know, what most people have ever been degraded. And I couldn't even lift my head up from that desk in that courtroom. I didn't want to look at anyone because I was so embarrassed. And it was that moment that I realized I had to forgive my mother, because if I didn't, I would never see my kids again. I would never, you know, experience the life that I needed to experience, because the judge was ready to take the kids away from me permanently. And so what I tell people is, if you're dealing with that issue of struggling with figuring out how to forgive someone, my question to you is it hurting you or is it hurting them? Because the reality is they don't care. It doesn't affect them that you're not forgiving them. It's only affecting you in your life. And what is it holding you back from? If you don't forgive that person, are you going to be the father or the mother that you're meant to be? Are you going to be the spouse that you should be? Are you going to be that successful entrepreneur that you want to be? Because if you haven't forgiven someone, even if it's something personal, you think it has nothing to do with business. As entrepreneurs, I think the biggest mistake is to think that business and personal life are separate, because they are not. As entrepreneurs, we are one person, and it combines your business and your personal life.
So where could people reach out to you or find more information on what you're doing?
So you can find me at vetpreneurtribe.com, and it's vetpreneurtribe.com. And you'll be able to find all the information there. If you are easily offended, if you don't like curse words, that is not the website for you to go to. I would not suggest visiting it if you're at work and you have speakers on. I am myself, and I say things that people may find offensive, and that's just your heads up there.
Nice disclaimer. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we appreciate you keeping a little bit of PG-13 today, man. Appreciate it.
So, of course.
Yep. Well, Andrew, thanks again for coming on. It was definitely a pleasure getting to know a little bit about your background and everything that you're up to. And yeah, look forward to this Vetrepreneur tribe of yours taking over the world. So,
thank you. I am too.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that awesome chat with Andrew. And, you know, since this interview took place back in September, yeah, I know it's been a while, the Vetrepreneur Tribe has expanded to over 10,000 members. And I think it's because he's highly, highly transparent. And if you can take the no BS talk and don't mind profanity, you know, it just might be a group that you're going to love. But hey, if you've been in the military or around folks that have been like myself, profanity should not be too much of a problem for you, because really, I mean, he's just being who he is, and that's what you need to be to have a successful personal mission-based business, really. Going on in today's show notes and show note extras, I have several videos of Andrew through the past couple of years. Some are from his time as a publicity guy, and a few are just a couple weeks old. And the reason I chose them in particular is that I want you guys to see that the transition that he's made in the past just a couple of years. You know, if you feel stuck running a business that doesn't necessarily fit you, then hopefully Andrew's transition inspires you to do more. And the first video is one from his old channel or business called Living Resilient. And in particular, he talks about the domino effect and how it impacts our daily lives. You know, you make one bad decision and it leads to multiple things going wrong. Next, after that, I have one where he's talking about publicity on the Funnel Hacker Radio. Yes, the ClickFunnels podcast. And, you know, maybe you're wondering how he got on there. Well, at this point, he had already been a successful speaker and they hired him to help them. And you'll hear all about that in that great interview. And the third video I have for you is one that's a bit more recent. And during his time building the Vetrepreneur Tribe, he's been all about, as I've been saying, transparency. And the thing is, in this video, he gives you a glimpse of his homestead and all he's up to there, including goat raising, right? And finally, speaking of goat raising, the last video is him interviewing a goat farmer and millionaire copywriter, Dana Derricks. And Dana is a really interesting dude, I gotta tell you. I mean, he sells books for over, drumroll, $400. So they talk about how he's able to do that. But I think that, you know, he's a great example of the value that Andrew brings to his groups. So lots of great additional content. I think you guys were, you know, going to get plenty of value from and possibly tell you if you want to join him in the Vetrepreneur Tribe. So in the next session, Veronica joins me again as we talk to an awesome guy named Mike Thorpe. And what got Mike on my radar was a Medium article he wrote about why he was having to give up Gary Vaynerchuk. And Gary actually got a hold of it and the article went viral. So we'll be talking with Mike on what he actually wrote and the business he recently started after thinking about doing it for a very long time. And so stay tuned for it coming out in the next couple of weeks. And yeah, guys, that's pretty much it for session 113. Remember, if you want to start your own group on Facebook after the success it's given Andrew and you want to make sure you do it right from the get-go, check out Arnie Giske's cheat sheet at newinceptions.com/Arnie Cheat Sheet. So that said, thanks for joining Andrew, myself, and Albert today. And until next time, gang, dig in and have fun and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go. At facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.